Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
An Erio's original.
With anti-Asian hate crimes at record numbers, this season of The Margaret Cho, we're examining the historical crimes that laid the groundwork for this recent onslaught of violence. I talk with Asian comedians, authors, journalists, podcasters, as well as the organizations and people working to stop Asian hate.
Welcome to the Margaret Cho Mortal Minority. Today we're talking about the man threatening to shoot people in the San Francisco bakery. And our historical subject is the Rock Springs Massacre. In 1885, a conflict between Chinese and white coal miners in Wyoming led to a bloody massacre and the death of at least 28 Chinese people. We're not really sure, but we're going to talk about it with my guest, who is really great, a comedian, a writer. She's got a great, great pandemic comedy show on Comedy Crossing. It's the cutest comedy show of all time. So I'm really looking forward to her being on the show, Jenny Yang. Thanks, Jenny Yang. Thank you for joining us today. And this is like, I mean, how are you feeling? How are you feeling with everything going on?
Oh, I'm numb to it now, but at first I was just like so exhausted. Like, yeah. It takes a lot of energy to stop all Asian hate, Margaret.
I mean, because you have to really, it's kind of like you have to really be ready to be outraged several times a day.
Yeah.
For different reasons here and there. I mean, there's just so many times that this has happened. It's like escalating.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like because people were becoming more aware of it, we were hearing more about the things that were happening already. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, I feel like, you know, these little incidents were all happening, but maybe people didn't feel like it was worth sharing, which is so sad when you think about it, you know, as Asians. We probably were like, oh, I just got beat up, but no one wants to know about that. You know, like...
Yeah. And it's so weird that... they don't think it's a hate crime. We don't think it's a hate crime.
Yeah.
That's like the first thing that's said. It's like, well, an Asian woman was just stabbed and her dog was stabbed, but it's not a hate crime. And it's like, what? I mean, before you even have a chance to respond, it's like, not a hate crime. Like, it's just kind of like a weird, but it's not a hate crime. Not a hate.
Well, that's the thing, though. Like, sometimes Asians don't want to believe it. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the thing. Sometimes Asians, we want to, like, be delusional and not think that it's because we were Asian that something happened to us. It's like a form of self-protection, you know? So, I don't know. So, I'm just trying to pace myself. And I just love that you want to dedicate this season to talking about Asian American history and stuff.
Well, I've learned so much and... You know, we'll get into that, but it's almost like this is the latest chapter in the history of Asian Americans and Asian American hate crime in this country. And every day there's something. And well, just there's a couple of things that I wanted to talk to you specifically. In the first part of the show, we usually go into the current crimes, but there was just one that was hit me this last weekend, which was a woman, I think Sunday, mm-hmm. was walking in Riverside County.
Yeah.
She was like a 60-year-old Asian woman who was stabbed to death, and her dog was stabbed.
I didn't know about that one.
And the first thing that law enforcement said is not a hate crime. And it's like, well, I'm not really speaking. It's almost like you take, like, you know what I mean? It's like, I'm really like, I didn't even have a chance to absorb the person's killed and their dog is killed. What the?
Did they catch the person?
They caught the person. And I guess it was a young woman. And she was like, I think she's like 23. And it seemed that she was having some drug issues and some mental problems. And it was her second attack, I think, of the day. Or
oh my
second
God.
Attack in a series of attacks. And the second one was a murderer. But of the dog and that woman. But it's like the... just the idea that this is like a flash in the news thing of like not a hate crime, you know, and this kind of begins that trend with what happened in Atlanta on March 16th, where it was very much like, oh, this is not a hate crime.
Yeah.
He was having a bad day and that was because he was having a bad day. It wasn't a hate crime.
What an insult.
Which sort of started.
Yeah.
It's so
what an insult.
Sickening.
Yeah.
And it's like, as Asians, it's hard to cope with it, you mm-hmm. know, because there's so many different feelings that I have around what to do. But the biggest feeling is fear.
Yeah.
Because I'm an older Asian American woman. I'm not willing to go outside.
Oh, I don't like that you feel that way.
I don't like it either. I don't like that it's like a very, I mean, it's a very strange time. I don't like having this fear, but I also don't know exactly what else to do, you know?
I mean, we have to continue living. I know personally, just in Southern California, during the course of the pandemic, two middle-aged white guys, in a threatening way, stopped in their cars in front of me and flipped me off. Two separate occasions. Like, for no reason. And it's like, they didn't say, oh, fuck you, chink, you got the Kung Flu. You know what I mean? But like, you can just tell, like, oh, they stopped that for a reason. That's right. Like, that's why for Asians, sometimes for us to identify what a hate crime is, it feels hard mm-hmm. because there's no automatic signifier that people necessarily go to indicate that that's where that's coming from. They just see us and they're like, mm-hmm. you look foreign. And then they just like, and then get mad. And then that's it. That's like whether getting mad is flipping you off or killing you. I don't know. It's just, I feel like hate crimes against Asians is just a little different than what most people kind of think of. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's yeah. just, you know. Yeah. You just know.
You can feel it. You can feel it. But it's also like, there's such a historical precedent mm-hmm. that in American culture, we have denial about.
Yes.
Because when people talk about racism, they're really talking about white on black racism and how that manifests. And of course, this is really in front of everybody's mind with the Derek Chauvin trial and all the stuff, you know, with Black Lives Matter. And this is very important. But at the same time, there are other races that we inhabit.
Yeah.
That we need to talk about racial hate crimes against. And so, you know, racism is really about what America is in a lot of ways. And the denial of it is part of the problem.
Yeah.
So what we're trying to do with this podcast is really address all of the different historical contexts of it, along with the modern instances. So this is from NPR, and this is mm-hmm. from this past week. San Francisco police on Tuesday arrested a 45-year-old man suspected of threatening and stalking an Asian woman working at a bakery store on at least two occasions. Daryl Hunter was taken into custody without incident, officials said in a statement that called the alleged actions a hate crime. So finally, this is a hate crime.
Yeah.
He has been booked at a San Francisco County jail on three counts of criminal threats, two counts of burglary, stalking, three hate crime enhancements, and a probation violation. The victim, a 42-year-old Asian woman whose name has not been released, first called police on Sunday when she says Hunter entered the store threatening to shoot Chinese people. So you have to actually exclaim, this is a hate crime.
This is the only reason they were like, okay, yes, fine, this is a hate crime. It's because the perpetrator straight up
said, I hate Chinese people. I'm going to shoot Chinese people. I mean, he had to actually say, I'm going to shoot Chinese people. According to her report, it was the third day in a row that Hunter had been in the shop and caused a disruption. But by the time officers responded to the call, the man had fled.
Yeah.
Hunter allegedly returned early Sunday morning, only this time the victim told police he used a hand gesture to mimic a gun and simulated shooting the occupants of the business before walking out the door. So it's repeated, the 3 days in a row, finally arrested. But it's like, he has to exclaim this is a hate crime. I don't know. I seems like it's obvious when the hate crime's happening.
You think, but apparently he had to be like, all right, everyone, in case it's not clear.
yo, this is a hate crime. I'm going to kill Chinese people. Like, it's like, I want to shoot Chinese people. And then, one day, and they came back the next day, and they came back the next day, and then finally charged with a hate crime.
Yeah.
It took 3 tries.
Yes. You need to make it that clear in order for someone to know that the motivation is racism. It's ridiculous.
Also, like, that the whole thing is just weird. Like, if you live in San Francisco, you're around Chinese people. So you're going to, like... That was probably one of the things that freaked me out a lot, too, is that a lot of these things are happening in the Bay Area in San Francisco.
Yeah.
You know, it's where I'm from. And people think,
like, California or a big city, you know, there shouldn't be any real sort of racism against Asians. That's what people think.
Yeah. And San Francisco in particular, it's one of the foundational cities of Chinese America. You know,
yeah.
Chinese Americans really settled in San Francisco. It's where sort of their base was from.
Yeah.
Which we'll get into. But I mean, I just think that all of it's troubling. And the fact that it took so long to be like categorized as a hate crime.
Yeah.
It's just another thing of like, I don't know, how do we say like, this is racism, this is racism, this is racism. We have to say it 3 times.
You know, I feel like even though it took 3 times, I feel like they caught this sooner than other people would have, you know,
it's
like,
true.
He didn't actually physically follow through with it. He made the threat. And so they were able to hit him with stalking and harassment. But I mean, I feel like there's something to the nature of the kind of anti-Asian racism and assaults that happen, that it's really, I feel like there's an element of obsession. Of like Asians being weirdos, or like Asians being foreigners, or Asians being, you know, the reason why you are suffering. Like, it's like we become this thing that people can project all of their grievances on, you know? And then that,
right.
whatever they're obsessing about. And so when they finally see the foreign face, it's like they feel like they can lash out. That to me, I feel like is the psychological dynamic that happens with a lot of anti-Asian stuff.
Yes, I agree. I think that it is. It's like we're good projection. Like we're all of the fear and anger and just whatever it is that's negative gets projected onto us as a group, as if we're all one person, or if we're all out to get one kind of or to blame. Even when that guy that was, I guess, the former CDC director, I'm not sure, but he's the one that said, oh, Wuhan lab was responsible.
Yeah, I believe it was the escape Wuhan, of the corona. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is like, well, what does that do? That you don't, I mean, it's like, well, that's not even
no evidence.
True.
No evidence.
There's no evidence. Also, that's compounding the problem of people being racist against Asians and Asian Americans in particular, and blaming them for the coronavirus when they have no relation to Wuhan, China in the first place. The fact that a scientist is saying this.
I would put scientist in quotes, Margaret.
Quote unquote scientist.
Yeah.
Air quotes scientist. I mean, like, what kind of dumb, like, irresponsible kind of like rhetoric or whatever is that? I mean, the anti-Asian point of view that even tries to, it would be beneath comment, like it's beneath contempt, but you have to bring it up because it's just so wrong.
American politics love to play into these highly charged imagery and stereotypes of Asians for their own benefit. You know, they mm-hmm. needed an enemy, and they're like, big, bad, strategic Chinese empire is the one who orchestrated this pandemic. You know, it's as if, you know, like that's really, really, there's a lab, like it was like an evil genius lab that did that. It's like they're writing this mm-hmm. weird Hollywood movie for right. Americans to believe in. And it's messed up because it's just part of the typical American political playbook.
Right.
Yeah.
It's so sickening. And the idea that it sets us against the rest of the world, as in the same way that the idea of the model minority sets us against the rest of minorities.
Yeah.
You know, the model minority myth was basically created and promoted during the civil rights era in order to show other minorities who are fighting for their rights. Oh, well, this is how you are a minority. Like, you don't complain. You just buy into whatever's happening. You try to excel in the society that's already pitted against you.
Yeah.
That's how you be a minority. But you don't fight for your rights or march.
Yeah. Just get straight A's and listen to the man. But yeah. But people forget.
And that's not helped us.
It didn't. Yeah. It, what people forget is, like, during that time, number one, Asians have always been in history. And I think we'll probably see in this case that we're talking about today, like, as like a way to try to break apart any solidarity against white supremacy. You know, mm-hmm. Asians were always brought in to, like, break apart that power and, like, have us fight against each other. You know what I mean? And
right.
And with the model minority stuff, people forget, like, yeah, other than refugees, it was also a part of the American policy to only selectively allow for highly skilled, highly educated Asians from Asia to show up in the States mm-hmm. for a long time, you mm-hmm. know? And so, unfortunately, yeah. some of the Asians who came over here wanted to buy into that model minority myth and be like, we're the good ones. We do get the straight A's. We do well, mm-hmm. you know? So it's messed up.
Yeah. It's so messed up. And we're gonna get into how messed up. So we're going to take a short break now. And when we get back, we will talk about the Rock Springs Massacre.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Okay, we are back with Jenny Yang. Now, I'm going to tell you about the Rock Springs Massacre. First, I'm going to give you my sources.
Yes.
Oh boy, did I have to do a lot of research for this.
I love it. Margaret, I love that we are just doing like Margaret Cho Asian American Studies 101. The professor is in session.
The professor is in. And I had to watch a lot of YouTube. I had to watch a lot of Wyoming PBS. So that most of it comes from this guy named Dudley. I couldn't catch his last name, but he did say Warsh. When he was talking about the laundries.
Oh, that's and my about biggest the Chinese pet peeve. Men who were
washing clothes and wash.
When people say Washington instead of Washington, that is my biggest pet peeve. Yes.
Washington.
I'm like, speak English.
He was saying it in reference to the people that were washing clothes. He was very good about all of it. Actually, I was really moved by a lot of the things that he said about these communities. Aww. But he's the main, I can't remember his last name now. After I watched him for like 3 straight hours on Wyoming PBS.
I
but he
love
kept
that.
Saying, Warsh. So I got it from a bunch of things on Miami PBS. Also, the podcast Modern West, Immigrations Interrupted. Also, the podcast This Day in History Class, speaking of the Rock Springs Massacre. Also, the podcast Today in True Crime. And this all happened in 1885 in, not Washington, it's Rock Springs, Wyoming. So this is from history.com, this part. On September 2nd, 1885, 150 miners in Rock Springs, Wyoming, attacked their Chinese co-workers, killing 28, wounding 15 others, and driving several hundred more out of town. So Union Pacific coal miners, they were really trying to pretty much get human labor as cheaply as they could.
Yeah.
And they were trying to, this is part of the railroad, but it was really mostly coal mining, you know, for the railroad. So coal miners were now, you weren't being paid for the time that you spent. You were being paid for how much coal you're producing.
Oh.
So it wasn't like about how long it took you to blast into the mountain to get the coal. It was just like how much coal you brought out. So that's how they were paid. At one point after they were blasting into this mountain, the foreman of one of the miners asked the Chinese workers to pull coal out of this one room. So it was the last part. So it was like this thing of like these other white workers were so furious that these Chinese people were here. The Chinese people, the workers were working for lower wages just because they had been unable to work anywhere else. They had come to America specifically for the gold rush and then working on the railroad and then some on this coal mine. But the fact is that we were the cheapest workers around because we were making more than we would in China. Mm-hmm. Most of the people were from Guangdong.
Mm-hmm.
Where's your family from in China?
From Jiangxi. Jiangxi, it's neighboring. Mm-hmm. It's just north of Guangdong province.
Okay.
And then Taiwan. Yeah, Guangdong that's is like a, half there and half Taiwan.
I love Taiwan. It's so good.
Taiwan's the best.
Taiwan has the best any kind of like rice cake.
Yes.
It's the best kind of rice cake.
Thank you.
Or like tapioca.
Starchy,
any kind of
glutinous.
Oh, starch. The best food ever. And drinks and starch. Starches and candies and nougats. I love Taiwanese food. I'm actually Chinese. I told you that. Wait, I'm Chinese, right?
No.
I know.
Margaret.
I know. This is weird. So I am Korean, but about 10 years ago, I did a DNA test, and they informed me that I'm actually 100% Chinese.
Shut your face.
Isn't that great? So I identify as Korean and Chinese.
Margaret!
So I don't know where my family is from in China, but
cousin.
I do know that I am 100% Chinese, also related to Lisa Ling.
Stop it.
She also did an ancestry test, and they cross at some point. We're not sure where, but we're totally related.
My mind is blown
Very
right
excited.
Now, Margaret.
I know. I'm so into it, and it's really exciting. Because I think a lot of times Asian Americans often define ourselves from our nation of origin,
yeah.
And then we maybe unconsciously somehow carry over some of the biases and, you know, things like arguments, wars that we've had
mm-hmm.
over the years.
Yeah.
And so now I feel a lot of freedom to identify
Good.
As Chinese
Please.
And Korean.
I love it. You're welcome to the family.
Thank you. I mean, we're all Chinese.
I mean, kind of. Thank you for saying that. I mean, I'm not going
to
say
Everybody
it.
Everybody is Chinese yeah. to some degree.
I
Everybody.
Agree. I know.
But these people in Rock Springs, Wyoming, were very Chinese. There was a Chinatown in Rock Springs, Wyoming, where there were several hundred Chinese workers there. So what they would do every year is they would have the Lunar New Year celebration, and they would rent the dragon from Marysville, California, which the Marysville in, I think it's near Sacramento.
Okay.
There's a big Chinatown there.
Yeah.
And this history is totally lost. There were over 200 Chinatowns in Western towns all around, like
Ooh, yeah.
frontier towns,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
each had a Chinatown. And Marysville would rent their dragon, which was very ornate and beautiful, which had been made in Hong Kong and brought over in a ship. They would put it on a train. And so they would schedule their Lunar New Year celebrations to when the dragon would be available.
Amazing.
It's so
when
great.
You couldn't afford your own. When you couldn't afford your own, you share.
When you couldn't afford your own drug and you just share the drug. It's an Airbnb.
It's an Airbnb dragon. Yeah,
Air D&D. It was an Air D&D. And so the dragon would just go around, and I found this one story so touching. So one day they rented the dragon, and I think they brought it in for a different celebration. It was a different American celebration. I don't know exactly what holiday it was. So sometimes the Chinatown people would bring the dragon over if they had it there to celebrate any kind of American occasion.
Yeah.
So on one of these American occasions, a little boy wanted a souvenir from the people that were sort of like operating the dragon. And so the dragon, the guy, the dragon master or whatever, he pulled out the eyes of the dragon and gave it to the little boy. And the little boy had it in his house until he was an old man and died.
What?
And the eyes are in a museum somewhere in Wyoming. Isn't that beautiful? I thought that was really great.
Yeah.
Because the eyes are significant. I used to have Chinese dragons in my house. I had two really gigantic Chinese dragons that were like, ones that you would use in a celebration, not a Marysville one, not a handmade one, but it was like with the big paper mache head. And I had one that was like black and green and the traditional red one.
Yeah.
So, but they were not, they don't become alive until you put a ballpoint pen in the eyeballs. So when you buy a dragon, I have a small one up in my shelf now. I got rid of the big ones.
Oh.
They were never alive, but when you buy one, you make it come to life by painting eyes into the eyeballs. And so to remove the eyes is really to remove a very significant part of the dragon.
I know. That was a very big gift.
It's a really lovely, loving gesture towards Americans, really, I think. So the dragon has deep significance. And if you look at these old photos, there's all these old sort of like tintype photos of the Chinese celebrations there, and you see the dragon, you can see how ornate it is. It's not in color, but it's like, oh, that it's just so, it's so beautiful, you know, that they would bring it out for like, I don't know, maybe with 4th of July have been a thing, I guess so. They also had a Joss House, which I guess is kind of like, it's where you would have a kind of religious celebrations. You would have like your relatives, their death day celebrated. You would go and you would burn incense and things. So the Joss House every year would change operation. So during the New Year's celebration, the keys of the Joss House would be put into a wooden ball, and then a firework would be put under the ball, and it would be exploded, and the wooden ball would go up into the sky and then come down, and the keys from the Joss House would be like land somewhere, and the person who grabbed them would be the keeper of the Joss House for that particular lunar year.
Wow.
So it was like a bridesmaid. Yeah, it's like very bridesmaids, but it's just the Joss House keys, which is it's important because the Joss House was also where you would have like people coming from China who were visiting, or people who were new to America who needed a place to stay. So it was like a hotel. It was like a social
center. Yeah.
A cultural center. There was a lot of suspicion about from white people saying, what are they doing in there? They're doing weird rituals. They're barbaric and all this stuff. But really, they were just burning incense and hanging out. And it was like a hotel.
Yeah. I love that it's called a Joss House. I didn't know they were called those things. I just have heard the word Joss describing Joss paper, which is like the paper money that you burn as a ritual to send money to your ancestors to show that you love them and respect them.
Yes.
Joss paper. Yes. Yeah. But I guess there's a Joss House.
There's a Joss House. Actually, after Joan Rivers died, I went to Hong Kong and I went to, I guess there would be a Joss House there. And I bought her a paper dog and paper candy and cookies and a paper like leash and a bunch of like dog accessories. And I burned them in the pyre, the big pyre there, so
for
that she could have all those things in heaven.
Oh, Margaret, that is like the sweetest thing.
It was nice. And then I also bought Leslie Cheung, who is that very famous Cantopop star who committed suicide in the 90s. I bought him an iPhone and I drew a tiny grinder I do a tiny grind. So I, because you could buy iPhones. So I bought him an iPhone, and then I drew a little tiny grinder so that he could have that app in heaven. Because it hadn't been invented.
So that Leslie can have some good hookups up in heaven.
Yeah, you know, you want to be able to hook up with whoever's coming in. You never know. So I do
Margaret, I honestly house. Think that is probably the cutest and sweetest. I've never thought about burning things as a tribute to other people, like when some stuff happens. Mm-hmm. Like I've only done it for my own ancestors. Like, you know, mm-hmm. if there was like a paper mache fur, I would have burned that for, you know, for Joan nice. Rivers.
That's nice. Yeah. I mean, I think it's like, I just love the gesture of doing also the stores where they sell all of the paper objects that you can burn. You know, to me, it's a really beautiful thing. And it's a really wonderful way to remember people you love. And, yeah. you know, it can be your ancestors, but it can also be people that you admire. I think it could be for anyone.
Yeah, and I love
certainly,
that.
You know, comedian ancestors is something that totally that's is true. Appropriate.
I think that's so true.
That works well. So the thing about the Chinese workers in Rock Springs, Wyoming, was that they were there, you know, and there were the white workers were like threatening them. So they were putting up posters. I think it was called the Knights of Labor.
The Knights of
I'm
Labor.
I'm not sure exactly. Mm-hmm. Knights of Labor. They were putting up posters and saying, you got to get out of Wyoming or else there's going to be violence. But, you yeah. know, they had to work. So they were just like, we're just going to do this. And it came up to a head when the foreman asked the Chinese workers to clear out this mine, which was actually just filled with coal after everybody had blasted in. And so it was mine number 6. And on September 2nd, 1885, about 6 in the morning, a bunch of kids were throwing rocks at the Chinese workers coming out of mine number 6. And so and the Chinese workers were just like, we don't want to get rocks thrown at us. And, you know, somebody told the foreman came out, and then all of these other white workers came out again. There was a huge like riot. And one of the white workers grabbed the foreman's pickaxe and just like really threw it and hit a Chinese worker in the head and just killed him immediately.
Oh my God.
Okay, this is what they said. The miners working in the Union Pacific coal mine had been struggling to unionize and strike for better working conditions for years. But at every juncture, the powerful railroad company had bested them. Searching for a scapegoat, the angry miners blamed the Chinese. And it just like came up to a head. Like it yeah. just came up to a head where, you know, it was just pandemonium. So the Chinese workers were running back to their Chinatown. They were going into their houses. And it was so weird. There was like 150 guys and then women who were posted out around, and they made like a border. And so they couldn't escape. Oh. So the men were setting the houses on fire. And whenever the Chinese people would come out, they would shoot them and kill them.
Ugh.
And then the women, every time they would try to like run past and get escape past the, you know, the guys, the women were shooting and killing them.
Oh my
the
God.
Woman, one of the women that were was murdering these Chinese people were actually, she was actually identified, but they don't have her name in any of the records, because this is the thing too, is that they say 28 people, but that's only the bodies that they found.
Yeah.
Because there were so many people that ran out trying to escape death, that they were running out into the forest and sort of like there were people that were very injured who died from their injuries out there. There are people that died from hunger and thirst and the elements. I mean, it's September, it's Wyoming, it's cold. Yeah. I mean, it's just like, you know, they don't know where to go or what to do. It's really a horrifying thing. And so this is from Wyoming history. The mangled and decomposed Chinese miners were out there. The Chinese consulate actually had people come and investigate. And yeah. The diplomat, they reported to the Chinese diplomat in New York that the bodies were being eaten by dogs and hogs.
Ugh.
And the coal mining company afterwards, they expected the Chinese miners to bury the dead, but They expected them to bury the dead, put the memories of this abomination behind them, and go back to work. There were so many incredible injustices that happened around this particular event. So the surviving Chinese people were like, Union Pacific put out like a slow train to take them all to Evanston. They also had another train that said, okay, we're going to just take you to San Francisco, a bunch of Chinese right. workers. But they tricked them. And when they got in the train to go to San Francisco, it was really the train to go back to Rock Springs, Wyoming. So they were just forced back to go to work. And they kind of didn't have any place to go. It was like this thing of like, I can't even imagine the fear that you would have. Like, you wouldn't want to stay there. If you were Chinese, you wouldn't be able to stay there.
No. You know, you're being attacked from all sides. Like, it just sounds like you're, you know, the housing, the shitty housing that you built for yourself, or that the Union mm-hmm. Pacific Railroad built for you, was being burned down. All of your friends are getting murdered. You want to leave, but then they send you back and
yeah.
to like go work with murderous white coworkers. No,
it's really scary. So, the way that everything happened with the 28 bodies they had found. So the reason were kind of, a lot of people sort of had their mind to go back to China was that they said that if you lived here and died in America, that you would be a ghost because you were not with your homeland. So what they yeah. did with the 28 bodies is they buried them in shallow graves. And then when the bodies were decomposed enough, they would scrape off all of the flesh, remaining flesh, Ugh. And put their bones in urns, and then send those back to China. So those are the 28 people, which I thought was like, oh, well, that's nice. You know, you're going to say, I mean, that sounds like freaky, but it's like, oh, that's nice, though. You're going to send your stuff home. Like, you're going to send your bones home.
Yeah, where you're buried and how is very important for Chinese people. And I can totally see how that would be so freaky if I was a Chinese person living at that time. Like, oh no, if I die here, then my spirit will be lost. Because I don't know if you've seen any like old school, especially like 80s Chinese ghost stories. There are these like in between like zombie-like people. That it's like the way the Grudge mm-hmm. looks, you know, where it's like the hair yeah. is in the front and you're wearing a white robe and you like, they're like little zombies and they hop or they float, you know, there's like those yeah. kinds. You'll just like haunt the earth because you're not, your soul is not settled.
Right.
I don't want to be that.
No, I would want to go back. Like in Korea, my grandfather is buried in like, they get buried in these weird like mounds. They're like little like small hills. And then they put a big gravestone there, but they don't put the person who died's name. They put all of the living ancestors' names.
Oh.
So it's really weird because you walk by and you see your name on a gravestone. And then I was like, when I was a little kid, I walked by and I asked my mom, I was like, why is my name on that grave? And she goes, oh, save time. to save time. There's save time. And I was so freaked out.
Oh.
But yeah, there's like the burial rituals of Asians are very like, you know, it's scary, you know, that all of it is scary. You know, the way that they were here. So I'm going to read from Wyoming history again. When a time came to build the Transcontinental Railroad east from Sacramento over the Sierra Nevada mountains, Chinese workers, though physically small, proved to be reliable, strong, and very tough. They had to be. Blasting tunnels through hard rock, cutting ledges for the railroad along cliffs and mountainsides was dangerous. Out of the 12,000 Chinese who built the Central Pacific, about 1,200 died on the job. Mm. And then in 1869, Central Pacific met Union Pacific in Utah. And finally, we had its promontory pass is where, and there's a very famous photograph where
oh yeah,
the white workers, one of them has a champagne bottle and the other white worker has champagne flutes.
Yeah.
And they're like toasting, but there's no Chinese men in the photo.
Nope.
And that's by design.
Oh, yeah.
Because they just didn't want us in the frame.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, they're probably taking the picture. Because we're always taking the picture. You know, but I mean, really, to be excluded there, that was the moment when we were cropped out of American history.
It's very symbolic.
That moment. It's very symbolic. That's 18, 1869. This is like, so the little bit after that, you know, this happened in 1885. Mm-hmm. And this event was really, really covered. It was covered by the New York Times. It was covered by Harper's Weekly then. It was covered by all of these papers, you know, and they had the Chinese consulate come out and China, they all had slightly different stories. So it's really hard to know exactly who was what. I mean, the white people, mostly immigrants. They were mostly Irish, Scandinavian, English, and Welsh. And, mm-hmm. you know, so they're probably also, definitely struggling, trying to kind of figure out what their place is in America. And since slavery had been abolished, there was this thing of like, okay, well, who's going to be superior? Like, what does it mean to be white? You know, and white pride sort of emerged out of this feeling. I mean, white pride always existed underneath it. But even, I think, the Irish and the Scandinavian and the English and Welsh, I believe that they weren't even considered white. Like, what is...
No. They were fighting with each other. They were mad about Protestants and Catholics still. But that's the thing, though, Margaret. It's like when they... The trick of American history is how whiteness developed. That's the biggest trick, is... When white people, back then they didn't consider themselves white, when white people decided that they could all unite under whiteness and just blame everything else on other groups, that's when they really surged to power. Because they're like, we don't have to fight each other. We kind of look like each other. Let's fight these other people who don't look as much like us.
Let's just fight the other. And it's really, I mean, what's really sad about this incident is that, you know, this is like, to me, this is a very important historical event, yet I had to search so long to even figure out these facts about it. It's not taught in any kind of capacity in school.
No.
I mean, you don't really have an Asian American historical lesson plan at all. I mean, there's a little bit about Pearl Harbor, I guess. A little bit about Japanese internment.
Yeah. But never in a way where you really go in depth or tell the stories of the people who are Asian American.
This is very significant. I didn't realize that there were so many Chinatowns. And I didn't realize that there was such a huge presence of Chinese people in Wyoming. I don't think I've even been to Wyoming. Have you?
I personally have not, no. And I feel like I've been to many of America's states.
Yeah. I've pretty much been to most, but Wyoming, it's like... You know, it's, I don't know, we got to go back to Wyoming. I think we got
to go back. Should we just take over again? Let's just take over. They're going to freak out.
We'll just take over. I don't know. We'll do a comedy show.
Yeah. I feel like.
A wonderful comedy show.
I feel like your reaction is so natural and common whenever I talk to people who don't know or haven't heard about certain things of Asian American history. Like just a few years ago. Something came up where, I was having dinner with my family, and my brother, who's older than me, but didn't take any ethnic studies or Asian American studies like I did. I mentioned something about how Los Angeles's Union Station, which was one of the endpoints of the Union Pacific Railroad, BT Dubs, used to be on ancient Indian burial grounds. Beyond that, it also... The current Union Station used to be on an old Chinatown that was a workers' shanty town of Chinese workers. Mm-hmm. And it was, I don't know if you knew this, but there was a big massacre there.
Oh, we covered the one that happened in 1871, which is the massacre in Chinatown. So I don't know if that's the same.
Probably the same, because they wanted to clear the land for the Union Station, essentially. So I remember mentioning this to my brother, and he we're eating with chopsticks, whatever. And he put his chopsticks down. You know, that shit's serious in the middle of dinner when someone puts down their chopsticks. And he was like, what? I've never heard of this. Why haven't I heard of this? You could see his brain freaking out. I was like, dude, we're missing this kind of history because we're not, it hasn't been a requirement. And so now some people have been trying to push ethnic studies in schools, and right-wing people are so afraid of that. They're so mad about it.
Yeah, because they're afraid of confronting the truth of what this country is and who we actually are. And we can't glorify our past anymore because we have to confront all of these things that create problems today that we should have dealt with back then.
Yeah. it's totally like repressed trauma that we have to deal with now.
Yeah.
As a country.
And we need to put our chopsticks down.
That's right, Margaret.
And make a stand.
You got to be like, what?
Yeah.
Stop what you're doing.
Putting the chopsticks down. So that's what we're doing. You know, we do this with talking about it and letting people know, hey, these events happened. And we are not the model minority. We are the mortal minority. And
so
that's it.
We are mortal. We're
Thank
human.
Thank you so much. We're mortal. We're human. We're putting the chopsticks down. Jenny, I'm so glad that I got to do this with you. This was really wonderful. And
I'm so honored.
Where can people find out about you? Where are you doing your shows on? Are you doing like with your Comedy Crossing? What are your handles? Give us all the intel.
Well, you can always find my info at jennyyang.tv and at jennyyangtv, JennyYangTV at Twitter and Instagram. Right now I'm still running an online show that's been really fun and popular called Comedy Crossing. At Comedy Crossing on Instagram, Margaret's done it. We've raised over $37,000 for Black Lives Matter related causes since June, since George Floyd Jr. was murdered. And it's just been a really nice outlet. We have people laughing and it feels kind of like a real room. And you get to like watch a comedy show done inside of a cute Animal Crossing video game inside a fun Zoom.
I love it. And Jenny is the best bathroom in Animal Crossing. Her whole island is really amazing.
So I have a gold toilet. I have a gold toilet. Yeah. It flushes.
It's really great. It's Gumsan. You know, they called the Gold Mountain, which is America, which was the gold rush. Which is the Chinese people from Guangdong called it Gumsan, which is the Gold Mountain, which is now
Jingsan.
Jenny Yang's toilet. Jingsan. The Gold Mountain is the toilet.
Professor Margaret Cho, thank you.
Thank you so much, Jenny. Today, we are highlighting Red Canary Song. They are a grassroots organization working to protect Asian and Asian American sex workers' rights. In talking about massage parlors, there's over 9,000 workplaces like these across the country with no political representation or access to labor rights. So this is really, really important, and I love this organization. So check out how you can support their mission at redcanarysong.net, and we will link to them in our show notes. To support our show, leave us a review and spread the word. If you want to support our show, subscribe, rate, review on Apple Podcast, and spread the word. Reach out to me on Twitter with your thoughts, at Margaret Cho, or at Instagram, at Margaret_Cho. The Margaret Cho is produced by the Irios Network.
Irios. Powered by Acast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.